Welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. Before you buy an electric vehicle, you need to be sure you can plug it in at your home, at work, or even the local mall. Some Canadian utilities are helping potential EV buyers know about the availability of charging stations in their neighborhood. Gord Reynolds, a utility and infrastructure leader in Ontario, Canada, says utilities are now using location analysis to help inform people's EV purchase decisions.
Utilities are starting to provide available maps to consumers to say you are in an area where you could buy an EV and likely not have a challenge, or you really need to rethink your decision about buying an EV.
Gord Reynolds describes to Esri's John Lenihan how geospatial technology is central to preparing for more electric vehicles on our roads.
Hi, Gordon, and welcome to Esri and the Science of Wear podcast.
Thanks for having me, John.
You've been an energy infrastructure consultant for years in Canada. One crisis facing Ontario, which is shared by many big cities in the U.S., is how to ensure there's infrastructure for electric vehicles. I understand the provincial government wants to support the population that wants to invest in EVs and buy EVs for their usage. But can you tell us the current situation for people looking to plug in EVs in their homes?
Auto manufacturing has always been a big part of the economy in Ontario, as has manufacturing generally. And the government has, and continues to, support automotive manufacturers and making sure that they're competitive and that they're meeting the demands that consumers, you know, are expecting of them. And now we're seeing the government really lean into the access that it has to things like, you know, nickel, cobalt, lithium, all sort of the rare earth elements that we need to fill out that supply chain. So the government, you know, from beginning to end is looking to mine, process, manufacture, all the things it needs to create an electric vehicle ecosystem. And now it's really leaning into what do consumers need? And it built out some of the major transportation corridors to make sure that people can charge while they're on their way from place to place. And now we're thinking about what do we do when people get there?
So you're talking about the end-to-end supply chain for electric vehicle manufacture production. And now we're honing in on, I've got my EV, I get home from work, I want to plug it in. Can you kind of expand on what that looks like for a community, let's say, in the greater Toronto area?
John, I would think like most of us, and even from industry, most of us think in terms of buying electric vehicle the same way that we think about buying any large appliance from an appliance store. When you go get a dryer, and for most people, they had a dryer or a new dishwasher, and you replaced it, you wouldn't necessarily call your local electric utility before you unplugged the old one and plugged the new one in. You would just sort of assume it works. And so for a lot of people, electric vehicle is not their first vehicle. You know, they're making the decision to either move to hybrid electric or full electric, and they've gotten rid of their, you know, their old school gas car or diesel car, and they're getting this electric car. And then the dealership says, oh, you know, we'll look after the charging infrastructure you need at home. And for most of us, that is the way it's marketed. We're assuming that we're going to be able to charge at home the same way we can wash and dry our clothes at home. For most of us, not all of us, but for most of us. And so, you know, the dealership will arrange for an electrician to come to your home and install the charger that you'll need to charge at home. And for some people, it is like just adding another dryer. It's about that much electricity. But for a lot of people, it's two or three times as much electricity as your current dryer. And that all of a sudden starts changing things.
So it starts changing things in terms of the demand on your service that's coming in from the electric grid?
Well, and this is part of the conversation we're having holistically in the industry, is we need more electricity in general. Things like data centers and the electrification of rail and the electrification of manufacturing you know, getting some loads off natural gas and onto electricity is just creating this a demand for electricity. And so we need more electricity. And Ontario is one of those geographies that's really leaning into small modular reactors or small nuclear plants. And so they've planned a number of them. They've broken ground on one of them. It's a 300 megawatt plant just outside the city of Toronto. And there'll be three more to come in the next few years. And so you need wires to go from those plants into the communities. What is it going to take to make sure that they have the infrastructure they need? And at this point, they don't know who's buying an electric vehicle or not. They have to use the best information they have to get ready for that, because it takes years to rebuild the wires on the streets out front of our house. And so they're trying to get ready. And we're talking about, in many places, like in Ontario, that will be in the hundreds of billions of dollars to get us ready for the electrification of all of these things, not just EVs, but they're a big part of it.
Is that before you get to the cost that the consumer or the homeowner would have to, you know, deal with in terms of upgrading their panel and upgrading their ability to plug their car in?
Yeah, exactly. Right now, we're still talking to those companies that bring the power from the power stations to the communities. We call those transmission companies because they're it's like very large scale, you know, like the towers you see on the side of the highway or running through the rural part of our states or provinces. They're really tall and have lots of wires on them. They look like a metal scarecrow. As neighbors, we all share in the cost to build that infrastructure, and we pay our proportionate share, but it's assumed that, you know, if you go on vacation next month and don't use any electricity, while your bill will be a little bit lower because you didn't use much electricity that month, you're still paying your share for that infrastructure because it's there and it's available for you. The problem starts at the street or the end of the driveway. What's it going to cost to upgrade it?
So what do you suggest as a way to address this challenge facing the consumers and the providers?
I like to unpack these problems, you know, in a pretty simple, systematic way. Like, what is the problem? What are the complicating factors? And what are the either options or what is the solution to that problem? And in many cases, it's we don't have a single version of truth to define the problem. And so getting clear on using different data sources, things like power wires on the street and their existing and forecasted capacity. And in many places, utilities are starting to provide available maps to consumers to say, you know, using simple like green, yellow, red stoplight kind of mapping to say you are in an area where you could buy an EV and likely not have a challenge, or yellow may have a challenge. You should call us before you buy an EV, or red, you really need to rethink your decision about buying an EV. They're providing that, but again, it limits it to the street. It doesn't address the premise. And so we need to start bringing different data sets, population, income level, other demographic data, housing type. Like, we know that, for example, in a lot of places, the building code stipulated a certain size of electrical service after a certain date, and that electrical service is very likely to accommodate an electric vehicle, most electric vehicles, comfortably. But that data doesn't sit with the utility today, and the people who have the housing data don't understand the power grid. So starting to bring that information together from different places into a common version of truth, a single version of truth that people agree to, and then starting to lay over information about the kind of people that are very likely to buy electric vehicles and what size of vehicle they might buy. Is it going to be like one dryer worth of energy or three dryers? You know, because the new premium cars are 50 to 80 amp connection services. And for reference, not too long ago, homes were built with 60 or 100 amps. That was kind of the norm. all new homes now are traditionally 200 amp services. But when you go and get a new premium car that will charge your battery quickly, top you up quickly, that's likely to be a 50 to 80 amp load. And that doesn't leave a lot for the rest of the stuff going on in your house. Now, we don't design the power or the house to assume that everything's on all the time. Of course not. But when you start putting a lot of big things on at the same time, like charging your electric vehicle and running your pool pump and running your dryer, you start to say, okay, well, now we're having problems. That's at 200 amps. But there's still a lot of homes at 60 and 100 amps. And they're going to really have to decide, can I afford that car? Are they even likely to buy a premium car? And to understand where we should be making investments in the power grid and designing programs for consumers, if we really want to incent that EV adoption, how do we do that in a way where the utility could support some or all of that and amortize that cost over a longer period of time? Most of us are, as consumers, are not going to amortize that cost like we would a roof or new windows. We're going to need the payback on that pretty quick because it's attached to a car, and we change out our cars pretty regularly. So we're not going to want to say like, oh, that $20,000 cost, I'll split that over 10 years. But if the utility said we could split that over 20 or 30 years, because that's a permanent improvement to the house now, and we'll put that on the bill and we'll finance that for you to help with the EV adoption, maybe that becomes palatable. But for a lot of places, that's not an option yet because they don't have a regulatory structure or a commercial structure that allows for that kind of innovation to occur.
Gord, I love this idea of kind of being more predictive about where you should anticipate EV growth based on looking at a neighborhood, a location, a geographic place, understanding who lives there, their socioeconomic details, bringing in data about the infrastructure in place with respect to the electricity grid, and then investing appropriately and planning appropriately. Is there someone who's doing it right? And if so, what are they doing?
Well, we see pockets, we see communities that are doing this, but on scale, we've not yet seen evidence that it's completely understood holistically. Certainly California is a great example of early adoption and lots of power system issues there. Big penetration of technologies like solar and energy storage at the home, combined with people buying electric vehicles, either for status purposes or sustainability reasons. I don't think yet we have really price competitive electric vehicles that have hit the market yet, but they're coming very quickly. And everyone is kind of, you know, these cars have been marketed to us as something we can plug in at home. This may not be a reality, and we may need to start marketing things differently. Like, there are places, multi-unit dwellings, apartment buildings, condominiums, where upgrading the electrical service to those buildings in urban centers may simply be not practical and too enough to accommodate everybody. We may have to have enough for a quarter of the people or half of the people. And so we may need to have ways where people agree to share that and move their cars or charge more intelligently. You know, you work nights and I work days. You charge during the day and I charge at night. Or it's just understood that when you go shopping or you go to work, you'll charge there. These are the sort of things that we're going to have to figure out. And I don't think we do that without having good spatial information about what infrastructure is where and where people are and where they're going.
So you talk about sharing of data. What does that look like?
We think that it is spatial information or place-based intelligence. And that's where we started. We legislated the use of a geospatial technology and compelled everyone to provide their information through a single platform. We did not want to be the authors of others' information, but we wanted to make it available through an exchange in a way that it would be useful to everyone equally and securely, so that we could do things like designs. And by designs, I mean like, what if? What if we went on this side of the street versus that side of the street? Could we save ourselves time and money by going underground or overhead? We couldn't make those sort of trade-off decisions without information. And we couldn't previously get information from the people that had it because we weren't clear on rules. So we got clear on the rules. We put that information into one platform, and we gave the people the option of doing that simulation and then coming to us and saying, this is what it looks like. I need help with a municipality. I need help with a utility. I have an issue with this permit. I have an issue with this other party. Can you please help? And it was through that common source of truth that we were able to get clear and work together, not in a blame or shame way, but just facts that everyone already had agreed to and could work collaboratively to resolve those constraints.
Well, Gord, this has been a fascinating discussion. I'm a hybrid vehicle owner myself, so very interested in the future and in making sure that when I get home, I can plug my vehicle in. I appreciate everything you've shared, and it's been great. I'm sure the audience will love the discussion. So thank you, Gord.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for listening to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. And thanks to Gord Reynolds. If you like this episode, please share it with a colleague.